Hello, everybody, and happy holidays. Welcome to another episode of the Volunteer Spotlight. I am your host, Evan Starnes. If you were nominated as the Volunteer of the Month and you have not been on the Volunteer Spotlight, please reach out to either me, Evan, at aftersight.org or Jennifer at aftersight.org, and we'd be happy to get you on. We'd love to, you know, highlight your story and, you know, why you became a volunteer. And speaking of Jennifer, I've been doing this podcast for about 2 years now. It's kind of hard to believe. And I've enjoyed doing it, but I've wanted to try to find ways to make it a little bit more meaningful for volunteers, which is why I'm happy to announce that beginning next year in January, I will be joined by Jennifer Neptune, the volunteer manager. She will be my co-host on this podcast. And I'm really excited to see what this does with the show, you know, as far as dynamics. Maybe we'll get even more fun stories and information, but who knows? Either way, she was going to be on today, but is doing another studio orientation right now. So that's okay. But today I am happy to introduce Bob Nettleton. He has been the reader of the Pueblo Chieftain for about 13 years now. Yeah, welcome to the Volunteer Spotlight, Bob. It's great to have you. You prefer Bob or Robert, by the way?
I go by Bob.
Okay, cool. So from here on out, you'll be Bob. Well, I've definitely read quite a bit of info. Thank you so much for all of that info in your email message. But for the audience here, let's kind of get to know you a little bit first, you know, and due to the fact that it's the holiday season, I always love to start the show with these fun, you know, a couple of fun just getting to know you questions. So, Bob, what would you say is probably your absolute favorite holiday treat? It could be a drink or a snack or whatever it could be.
Oh, I think it's got to be pumpkin pie.
Oh, that's perfect. And it is seasonal too. I don't feel right eating pumpkin pie in the summer.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. I guess mine would be eggnog, but I think everybody knows that at this point. Everybody on staff knows this at this point.
Yeah. But
well, very cool. If you could have one Christmas gift, and that would be the only Christmas gift you'd get for the rest of your life, I know this is a toughie, but what would it be?
Oh, I think the best Christmas gift for me, we have a very large family, is just time with the family.
That's beautiful. Well, you've been, you know, obviously, like I said, you've been reading for 13 years. And you've had your own house building company, which we will be talking about as well. But initially, how did you first hear about Aftersight and what motivated you to join as a volunteer?
You know, Evan, I can't even remember who introduced me to it was AINC at that point. I think it was a friend of mine who had suggested I was looking for some volunteer opportunities, and they had suggested this organization in Boulder. And I came up and met with Kat, and here I am.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was back in the days of Kat. Yeah, and how did you like the in-studio experience back then? It was a little different.
I actually liked the in-studio. One of the things I liked about that is it broke up my week. Mm-hmm. In the home building business, we're always running around, chasing things, and it was nice on midday Wednesday, hump day, to
yes.
Take a trip to Boulder, and I'd catch up on phone calls and enjoy the scenery and come do my program and then drive back. And it was a nice break in the middle of the week. So
right.
I was kind of sad to see that go during the COVID years.
Indeed. Well, and it has made a return too. And you are able to now book studios if you want. So, you know, you're always welcome to come here and record in person if you ever like. But when you first began recording, you've started and have always done the Pueblo Chieftain. Did you do it live at all? Were you one of the live readers?
No, I was not. It's always been recorded.
Nice. Yeah, we did have live readers back then. So I always like to kind of figure out, especially being the fact that I joined in 21 and missed that experience. It's always fun to know, but that's okay. What was it like for you when you very first began, you know, reading? I know there's a lot of nerves and a lot of adjustment, you know, especially from just reading to yourself as opposed to live reading out loud.
Well, I've never been much on public speaking, always extremely nervous speaking in front of a crowd. So I think when I first started, I had to get over that. I think your tendency is to speak very quickly.
So it is.
The biggest thing I picked up pretty early on was the cadence and the emphasis, so you didn't sound like a robot reading a script.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely will say I've heard a lot of auditions that you can tell, you know, if somebody's nervous, they're talking really quickly or they're talking like a robot. And it is kind of interesting to hear that. And, you know, the subtleties that go into, you know, even the tones, even things like what we were kind of dealing with a couple of years ago, like implicit bias. You know, if you're reading an article that you don't necessarily agree with, trying to keep that bias out is a little bit tough. And you've always, at least, you know, from the time I've been listening to your audio, you've had a natural voice over voice, in my opinion. Do you have any past experiences working with audio or recording or any of that?
I don't. People always say, your voice, you should be on radio. So here I am. I actually took a voiceover class, I believe it was put on with a DCPA a few years back to kind of explore that opportunity, which was a lot of fun from a theatrical standpoint, but I never have pursued it.
Yeah, that was kind of an answer to my other question too. You know, since volunteering at AfterSight, has it led to other connections or other doors being open besides that?
It has not. But now that I'm retired, I'm looking for things to do. So you never know.
Yeah.
So many movies on Netflix are dubbed these days. I'm looking, thinking to myself, well, gee, maybe I can become a dubber for Netflix.
Hey, you could do that. Or you could try to do like audio description or stuff like that. I mean, and, you know, even here at AfterSight, there's always plenty of, you know, volunteer opportunities, of course. And during your time reading The Pueblo Chieftain, were there any like really valuable lessons or takeaways or things? You know, I know we talked about your mastering the cadence and your speaking style, but were there any other, you know, just valuable life skills or things that you were able to pick up since your time here at AfterSight?
Oh, I think just being able to slow down a little bit and kind of actually read the stories and read what's into them and get to know the community of Pueblo has been kind of exciting to me. I always tell people, I know everything about Pueblo.
Right.
So, and people go, who cares?
That's the fun part about it is that, and I've heard this from several readers that read different local newspapers, is that you, even if you don't live in the area, you get a very good, and even if you read one day a week, you get a very good sense of the area. And so when you go there, you kind of, you're already familiar with the, well, in your case, the Pueblo area. That's always a benefit of being able to read one of these local newspapers.
I always tell my wife, let's go down to Pueblo, you know,
right?
And she's like, no, thanks.
Yeah. Now, Pueblo is a nice area though.
Yeah, I think it gets a kind of a bad image. Historically, there's been, you know, it's a very industrial area with a steel plant there, and they still have a fairly high crime rate, which unfortunately I get to read about.
Yeah, that's always fun. Are there times where you just eventually, you just have to, if you're reading a particularly difficult article, like what is your method, especially if it starts to kind of bother you a little bit? Do you have a method?
I think just take a deep breath and power through it. You know, there's a lot of crime articles, like I said, you read about there, and the details in those articles are a little unsettling at times. You just need to look at it objectively and realize that you're not doing it for yourself, but you're doing it for an audience, and they need to know the information. I think sometimes there's more detail than there needs to be, but
yeah,
I'm not the editor.
Yeah, and there's varying viewpoints and stuff too. Do you feel like some newspapers, including the Pueblo Chieftain, maybe they're starting to become a little bit more, I guess, you actually used the word corporate when we were in the living room there, but is that kind of the general feeling, I take it?
Yeah, well, the Pueblo Chieftain was bought by the part of the USA Today Network now. So I would say that the majority of the articles are either USA Today bylines or the Associated Press, whereas when I started, I think there were at least a half a dozen articles every week about the Pueblo itself. Now they seem to limit themselves to three local articles on the front page, And until you get to the sports page, everything else is national, international news.
Yeah, AP Wire stuff and basically just recirculated stuff from other programs that have already been read. So
the thing I really used to enjoy about the Pueblo Chieftain that they don't have anymore is they had two editorials every week, and then they had letters to the editor, which I always enjoy reading those. And they got rid of those a few years back.
It seems like a lot of newspapers had that. I'm actually very surprised to see that they got rid of that particular section. Since you've been reading at home for, you know, a few years now since COVID, let's talk a little bit about your recording setup, the technical nitty-gritty. So can you describe in, you know, as much detail as you can, what do you use to record? What's your recording environment kind of look like?
Well, I have a home office, so I close the door and I have two laptops, one with the Audacity pulled up on it and the other one with the Pueblo Chieftain, and I just use a headset with a microphone. I did purchase a better headset. I keep kicking around, gee, should I buy a standalone microphone?
Well, and yeah, and I mean, for me, and I guess just to answer your question now, as an audio technician, I always recommend a standalone microphone just because it doesn't pick up the head noise and doesn't sound as like mid-range heavy. And I mean, you can get them for as low as $40-$50. And with the changes that we're making to our recording platforms, hint, hint, switching away from Audacity and going cloud-based, our new software will have some polishing tools that are pretty much seamless. You just click and click, and it will, you know, kind of, it will equalize your audio, make the levels sound good, and remove background noise. So, I mean, you might actually still be able to just get by with the headset. And honestly, most headsets, as long as they plug in, and I can tell yours is a USB headset, you know.
Correct.
As long as they plug in with a USB connection and they're direct wired, they sound okay. Wireless headsets, I always say just try to avoid those unless it's one particular Corsair model of headset that actually does sound sufficient for reading. But I digress.
You have to give me your recommendations on a standalone microphone.
I can definitely do that. Yeah, we can talk about mics after recording for sure.
When's the transition into the cloud-based program?
The transition into the cloud-based program is going to be slowly rolling out, really starting next year. We're preparing a lot of the training materials and just doing a few practice runs with a few select volunteers of varying technical abilities just to kind of work out all the kinks and ensure that these trainings are as seamless as possible. But I'll tell you right now, the methods of having to record in Audacity and then export your recording to your computer and then upload it to the portal and then log your hours and stuff, that's all going to change. And pretty much you're going to be able to just log in, and we use the Riverside platform, which we're currently recording on. And then all you'll have to do, you'll have a link and you'll click that link and it'll take you into the studio. You'll, you know, select your microphone and then click OK, click record. It'll open the interface. And if you hit record again, it's pretty much, you know, you just do your read in one continuous take, hit stop, hit submit, and you're pretty much off to the races. Minus, you know, you'll have to share it through our podcast platform, Transistor. But we, you know, it's kind of, we've gone down to one system. We've been trying to kind of streamline everything because everything has been like five different platforms and spreadsheets, and it's just all over the place. And it can be kind of a challenge to manage. And I'm not to toot my horn, but I'm the only one that's trained on our old system right now. So if I go on vacation and something goes haywire, they got to call me. So
you're out of business.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to that because I agree with the Audacity part of it at the end is tedious.
It really can be tedious. And it, you know, you won't have to update anymore. In fact, you'll even be able to, just because, you know, especially microphones on phones, and you have a Samsung phone, which has fantastic, they have fantastic microphones. You'll be able to record and read from your phone as long as, you know, you don't bump it around. So, and, or a tablet or an iPad. So you'll just have a lot more options to record with. You're not stuck to using a PC or Mac with Audacity, which I'm sure a lot of people are going to be very, very happy about.
That really would be helpful for me because now that I'm officially retired, we're doing quite a bit of traveling, and I always have to do a absence when I'm not here because I don't have my setup. So it'd be nice to be able to do it off my phone when I'm in remote locations.
There you go. But I got to say, if you are on vacation, hey, vacation's vacation, man. Yeah. I would take the absence still.
Step aside, yeah.
Yeah, that's just
I've me. Always feel guilty about it.
I understand. We all feel guilty when we take time off, but time off it's important. And reader burnout's a thing, and like, this is just coming from me, like, enjoy the vacation to the best you can, and don't worry about reading, you know. The Pueblo Chieftain or whatever publication, it'll always be around, and you know, you'll be all right.
I take that as a okay then. Yeah. I won't worry about it.
Take it as a big green flashing light. Well, a big green light, I guess. You mentioned retiring, and actually that's a great segue into my next question. I'd like to talk, and you know, I'd just like to ask you about your home building business that you started when you moved to Colorado in 1983. Now your son, Nick, is taking it on.
Correct, yeah. Actually, I moved to Colorado in 83, and I started my own business in 88. I worked for about three different companies in the mid-80s. For those who were around then in Denver, it was a pretty bleak time in the real estate business. With the oil bust, most people were moving out of Colorado if they're in the oil business and going to Texas. So it was a slim pickings there. Mm-hmm. So the only way to really stay in the business was to do it on my own. So we started in 88, and here we are 38 years later, still doing it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that honestly was back in, you know, I feel like before the transformation of Colorado, as I call it, back when it was more of a cattle kind of, more comparable to like Nebraska, I suppose. It was a lot quieter. There was a lot less to do, I've heard. And growing up in the early 2000s and stuff, I didn't get to see much of that. So I do very much appreciate the perspective.
It was definitely different.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So were the house prices.
Right? Yeah, you could get a house for like 20, 30 grand and a pretty nice one, I heard, right?
Well, we do high-end customs. Ooh. And back then, we could build a super luxurious, nice house on a large lot in a mountain community for $400,000. And now you can't even get a starter home for that. Now our houses pretty much start at about $1.5 million and go up from there.
Right. I mean, if you're on the low end, maybe you'll get a two bedroom house, like a ranch style in a neighborhood if you're lucky. It is definitely interesting to see how the markets have changed. And I guess now now's a good time to kind of, if anybody out there is looking to build a home, I feel like it is always, you know, it's a wise idea if, you know what's involved and you really want to make things the way you want. Can we plug your company? I know your son Nick's doing it now.
Sure. Yeah, we're Nicholas Custom Homes. He's based in Castle Rock down in Douglas County. He lives there and does most of his work down there, but he goes up into Denver and Cherry Hills Village and neighborhoods like that, Greenwood Village.
Well, excellent. So yeah, if you're looking for a home, that's definitely a good place to go, you know, especially if you want to build a nice luxury high-end house. I'm already thinking of the layout for mine, even though I'm in an apartment and you know, comfortable there, but it's a lot of fun. I feel like all the nitty-gritty of home building has always been, parts of it have fascinated me. A lot of the technical and electronic things, like, you know, going with like HVAC and how they are installed in homes during construction. Stuff I would love to have gotten into, but you know,
we've done houses, Evan, that, believe it or not, people spend $400,000 to $600,000 on some of these houses just on the home technology and the audio video component of the house.
Yeah.
It has bundles of wire that look like they're in a submarine.
Well, yeah. And they have to all go down to some central amplification or, you know, controllers, or I've seen houses that do have like speakers all over the house built into the ceiling, into the walls. It's crazy. And then, you know, all these smart homes now. And what do you have an opinion on like all the newfangled smart Wi-Fi enabled stuff?
Well, I think these days everything's internet based, which is the way to go, because in the past, the upgrades for the technology, when everything was hardwired into control modules in the basement, we'd have entire racks of different electronics to control the house. Inevitably, the maintenance on those was very intense, and then they were obsolete in a couple of years. So yeah. I think now everything's internet-based, which is a lot easier to update and keep track of, and plus the service, because you don't need a service technician to come to the house anymore.
That's true. And I mean, I get, the only downside is, you know, it is dependent on a server infrastructure that if it goes down, you know, the connectivity, the Internet of Things connectivity of that particular device goes with it. But on the flip side, I have to say, like, the ability to connect devices to Wi-Fi and into mobile apps and smart speakers has also just made them a lot more accessible. And I don't know about you, but I've not been particularly thrilled with the amount of new devices and appliances that are all flat panel, and they're all these touch sensitive buttons that you can't feel. And then if you don't have Wi-Fi, you're kind of, it's hard.
Well, that drives me insane, to be honest with you, because everything's internet. Mm-hmm. Do you really need to be able to look inside your refrigerator when you're at the grocery store to see whether or not you need a quart of milk? Mm-hmm. And that's where things have gone. Your washers and your dryers and everything are internet controlled. So I don't know if you're on vacation in Mexico, if you care whether you can turn your dryer on from Mexico or not.
No. Although I will say, when I was attending the Colorado Center for the Blind, I'd connected my grandparents' washer and dryer to the LG app. And it was kind of funny because I could always get notified whenever they were doing the laundry. Not that I needed to know that, but it was kind of fun. And I don't know. I'm kind of an old school. I prefer buttons and knobs and switches and things like that. Physical controls. Not everything necessarily needs to be internet connected. Plus now, and you know, I'm not trying to start, this is not an opinion show or a show to start controversy, but I've heard rumblings that even some of those Samsung or those fridges that have cameras built into them and the giant tablet thing in the front are starting to display advertisements. And
that's a little much.
That's too much. I agree. If I ever get a new fridge, it's going to be a dumb fridge, as it, you know, so to speak.
When the ads start coming up on the touchscreens in your cars,
oh gosh,
then you know you're going to have a problem.
You know how many, like, could you imagine how many, like, lawsuits and accidents and stuff like that that will cause, even with all of the safety features in cars? Like, you know, they're talking about self-driving, but the technology just is not there. You have Waymo, but even so, like that.
Did you see that story on the news this morning about the Waymo that drove through the middle of a police stop in LA?
Really?
Yeah, cops were out with guns drawn. The guy's lying on the pavement and the Waymo just kind of drives right by.
It just has a mind of its own. Yep. I've heard about them driving in circles too. And they know where to charge, and they usually are, you know, when they're not in use, they're stationed in like a centralized parking lot. And I saw a video of Waymos honking at each other.
Yeah, I saw that one too.
All night.
People live next door. You have these cars backing up with their beepers and everything.
Yeah, and they're autonomous, so there's not really anything you can do about it either.
Nobody you can go out and shake your fist at.
Yeah, although I'd love to. I mean, I've shaken my fist at plenty of robots and computers, you know.
I'm sure.
Yeah. The stuff that I tell to my computer is stuff that I wouldn't tell anybody else. You know, calling it stupid and a piece of junk, stuff like that.
I think we all do that.
Right. It's, yeah, pretty natural.
When you start throwing them across the room, then you know you've crossed the line.
I've been guilty of that. Especially when I was younger, threw my phone across the room many times. It happens. Well, this has been a pretty fun conversation, but before we wrap up this episode, I'd like to give you the time. Do you have any questions or feedback for myself, the host, or AfterSight as a whole?
No. The one thing I didn't mention, which is fairly important in my original decision to get involved with AfterSight or AINC, was I have a aunt who is blind, and I've always been inspired by her ability to function without eyesight. So she was kind of a major inspiration in looking to this organization.
Sweet. That is excellent. And I do love those stories, because some folks, you know, when they volunteer, it is because they have a family member who is blind or low vision and benefits from these services. And then, you know, sometimes you're just looking in the volunteer opportunity section of a paper or on Volunteer Match, and, you know, we just happen to pop up out of nowhere. But
I've really enjoyed it, and I've been doing it for 13 years, and then I look forward to keep on doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, do you have any fun or interesting, or what, do you have any plans for the holiday season?
Well, now that we're retired, I'm not a very fond person, and the older you get, the less you like cold weather. So we're escaping to Mexico for a week and next week, and then we're heading to Florida for 2 weeks in January. So we're looking forward to getting out of the cold.
That's perfect. I can second that. I guess I'm an old soul, or I don't like the cold at all, because honestly, especially now would be the time I'd try to go to like California or Arizona where it's nice and warm, because 20 degrees and snow is just not my thing at all. So,
well, and then being in the construction business for years, the cold and the snow makes things immeasurably more difficult, because you wake up in the middle of the night wondering what pipe is frozen and broken and what window got left open and all those kind of things that are problematic when it gets cold.
Yeah, I fortunately, well, apart from when I was a kid, I've not had to deal with a burst pipe yet, but I'm sure, well, knock on wood, there will not be a time, because I will stay on top of that. But, you know, turn your hot water on, everybody, if you're leaving the house, and keep your heat at, it's like 65, because a lot of people forget to do that and they just turn everything off. You come back to a flooded basement or stuff like that. It's a trip.
And if you go out of town for an extended period of time, turn your water off.
There you go. Oh, yeah, and always know where your master water shutoff is. A lot of people don't. Like, you know, you usually figure out where the breaker box is because it's big and you can see it, but a lot of people don't know where that is. And if you have like a flood situation, you kind of need to know that. So, hey, PSA for everybody. You know, always love that.
We had a neighbor who had that problem last year, came home and there was 3 feet of water in their basement. So.
Oof. Oh, gosh. That's
no fun.
No fun at all. Well, Bob, thank you so much for coming to the office today and taking the time to be under the volunteer spotlight. I hope you had a good time. It's definitely been fun, and I've enjoyed our conversations.
Likewise, I appreciate the opportunity to come up and speak to you.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Volunteer Spotlight. If you've got questions or feedback for me or any of our other original podcast hosts, we'd love to hear your feedback. You can always send your feedback in an email to feedback@aptersight.org or send it in a voicemail at 720-712-8856. I hope everybody enjoys the holiday season, whatever holidays you celebrate. Definitely take as much time as you can to spend it with friends and family, eat lots of yummy, delicious food, and drink lots of eggnog for me, if that's your thing. And, you know, it's okay if it's not. And stay tuned for next year's episode. I'm really excited to bring Jennifer on, and I'm sure that it will, you know, bring even more to the Volunteer Spotlight. With that being said, this has been another episode of the Volunteer Spotlight, and I'm your host, Evan Starnes.